Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this 6th day of June 2009. We're taking you up to the 11:30 hour, 90 minutes this Saturday. This week is too big to do an hour. I mean, this is one of the great sports weekends over the course of the year. A little bit of everything going on today and tomorrow. We'll begin, of course, with the Belmont, which will take place today around 5 p.m. You'll have, of course, Mind That Bird going for its second Triple Crown race, its Triple Crown win of the season. They, of course, won the Kentucky Derby, almost won the Preakness, as Rachel Alexandra was able to hold him off. And I'll watch the race. And, I'll be into it a little bit. But this race, it feels like this race is, peanut butter without jelly, to be honest with you. Rachel Alexandra not being in this race definitely takes away from the showdown that all of us were looking forward to after these two horses went at it a few weeks ago back in Baltimore at the Preakness. It was a great race. Rachel Alexandra, was able to hold off Mind That Bird. You had the whole thing with the jockey, Calvin Burrell going back and forth, riding Rachel Alexandra in the previous ride, Mind That Bird in the Kentucky Derby. He'll be on Mind That Bird today since Rachel Alexandra is not running. But I'm here to tell you that it definitely takes away from the race. I mean, you had the perfect scenario. You had Rachel Alexandra win the race. You had Mind That Bird prove that he's legit as far as being not just being a horse that come out of nowhere and just win a race by luck or whatever. A lot of people questioned Mind That Bird after the Kentucky Derby, questioning whether or not he was actually that good. But he definitely proved his worth, his weight in gold at the Preakness, because he almost beat Rachel Alexandra. And Rachel Alexandra was supposed to run away with that race. So definitely it's something missing from that. From this race with no Rachel Alexandra. And again, I don't understand why these owners or traders put more stake in a race like the Fairground Oaks than a race like the Belmont or the Preakness or the Kentucky Derby. I mean, Rachel Alexandra only ran one Triple Crown race, and that was the Preakness. And that's certainly some questions that we'll ask our friend Alex Brown, who will join the program at around 10:15 or so. And I'm sure he'll be able to give us some good explanations on that. And it doesn't make sense to me. Okay, you don't run a Kentucky Derby, you blow away the field of the Kentucky Oaks, come back, do a good job at the Preakness, fight off Mind That Bird. You can't come back. You got to be able to sense the moment. I mean, this isn't a classic race. It was a classic race. You had the whole storyline with Calvin Burrell and going back and forth. It's a perfect sports story. It's a great sports story. I mean, the horse did not run the Kentucky Derby. I could see if it had ran in a Derby. Well, I couldn't. I mean, if it had ran in a Derby and ran a couple of other races. To me, you can't run these other races. You can't. How do you put these other races over the Triple Crown races? I mean, that's what I don't understand about this whole ordeal. How are these other races more important than the Belmont, Preakness, or Kentucky Derby? Now, I understand that very few horses nowadays run all three races. Today, when you watch the Belmont, you will only see two horses that ran all three races. You have Mind That Bird and also Flying Private. So nowadays, I mean, obviously the Kentucky Derby, the Triple Crown is not the end-all, be-all for these horses. In the grand scheme of things, it's a small part of these horses in terms of these owners wanting to put them out to stud, wanting to make money on later on in the year when you have the Breeders' Cup and Travelers and all these other races. And I can understand that. But don't tell me that this horse. I mean, this horse, from what everything I heard, is just tremendous shape, in great condition. And unlike the gap between the Kentucky Derby and Preakness, which is 2 weeks, this is a 3 week. I mean, the gap between the Preakness and Bama is 3 weeks. That was the best time for Rachel Alexander to, not to get healthy, but to be recovered from the Preakness, especially after not running the Kentucky Derby. I know she ran the Kentucky Oaks. I understand that. But one triple, of course, despite the fact that there will be no Triple Crown from a horse perspective, that will be on the line. Calvin Burrell has a chance to become the first jockey to win a personal Triple Crown on two different horses. Of course, he rode Mind That Bird, won in the Derby, rode Rachel Alexander, won at the Preakness. Now he's back on Mind That Bird, so he has a chance to make history. And Burrell's been talking a lot. I mean, he better win the race. He's been, kind of like Rick Dutro last year, who the trainer of the of Big Brown, who came up, who basically came up small in the Belmont last year after just, nobody could beat Big Brown. Big Brown was, secretariat, the way Rick Dutro was talking about that particular horse. Burrell, of course, has guaranteed a victory. He's obviously extremely confident about the horse, and as well as he should be from a certain standpoint. I mean, Mind That Bird, in this Triple Crown season, Mind That Bird has been clearly the best horse. Considering, winning the Kentucky Derby, finishing second in the Preakness, and now is a 2-1 favorite to take the last and final Belmont. Take the last and final Triple Crown race in Belmont in New York. And, no Rachel Alexander has definitely had an effect on attendance figures at Belmont. There's no question about it. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people who are disappointed that you were not going to get a Mind That Bird Rachel Alexander showdown, the rubber match, as I called it a few weeks ago, that I was hoping for. I was almost hoping that Rachel Alexander won, that you would get something like this. But, Rachel Alexander pulls out last week, and you won't get that. But still should be a pretty good race. You have a couple of Nick Zito horses are in the running, Minor Escape, and also Brave Victory. The horse everybody's been talking about as being a horse that could challenge Mind That Bird the most is Charitable. It's Charitable Man. It's a 3-1. A lot of people like that horse. Charitable Man did not run it. Now has an advantage from a conditioning standpoint. Charitable Man did not run the Preakness or the Derby, so he should definitely be fresh for this race. Remember one thing about this race. This race is not. I'm not sure how speed horses will run. How well speed horses will run this race. This race is the longest out of all the Triple Crown races at a mile and a half. You see a lot of horses start out strong here and fall in that last furlong, struggle to finish. I mean, that's the beauty of this particular race. The most physically demanding of all three races, easily, by far and away. And again, if you're a speed horse, I would have to think that those kind of horses would be at a certain disadvantage. You almost have to run this race almost like a marathon, so to speak, where you have to pace the horse and make sure that he finishes strong, that the horse finishes strong down that last furlong. That last quarter mile has caused a lot of problems for horses who thought they were going to win the Belmont coming down the stretch. And you wonder about Mind That Bird, in the endurance, his endurance going, being one of only two of the horses in this field that run all three of these races. I mean, Mind That Bird goes out there in the Kentucky Derby race and expends a lot of energy coming from behind, passing 16 to 17 horses to win that race. You saw, the Preakness, finishing second. Right, so that'd be something to keep your eye on. I don't think Mind That Bird is, obviously, he's a favorite, but I I don't know how much confidence I have in mind that Bird winning this race based on some fatigue issues I think that the horse might have. I would not be surprised if he didn't win the race. Would not be surprised. I don't know who is going to win it. I don't know who's going to win this race. Of course, I haven't seen Terrible Man, you know, during this season. But Mind That Bird's going to have a tough. I think he's going to have a tough time today. Personally, I think Mind That Bird's going to have a tough time in this race, even though it is a clear cut favorite. So you'll have the Belmont today. Of course, it'll be on ABC around. They're posted around 5 p.m. And still looking forward to it as you cap off a pretty good season of Triple Crown races. Again, the Rachel Alexander not being there takes away from this race. It takes away from this Triple Crown season altogether. I think that this would be one of the best sports stories of the year had Rachel Alexander and Mind That Bird went at it in this last race of the Triple Crown season. 347-215-6180. We're gonna have Alex Brown coming up in a couple of minutes talking about this race. A lot to do today. We have NBA, we're talking about the NBA Finals, of course, talking about the Stanley Cup, which has certainly got some intrigue in it. All of a sudden as Pittsburgh has roared back to tie series, talk some baseball and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call. French Open actions, with Lena Kuzminova is up 6-4-1-0 in the women's final of the French Open. Kuzminova is looking for her second Grand Slam title. She won the 2004 U.S. Open. Danira Safaria, of course, is looking for her first ever Grand Slam. Danira Safina, to get that right, the sister of Murat Safin, has never won a major, ranked number one in the world, and right now she's down a set and 1-0 in the best of three in the women's French Open final. Of course, tomorrow Roger Federer will try to make tennis history as he will try to tie Pete Sampras's all-time record for Grand Slam wins, and also try to complete the career Grand Slam. Federer will take on Robin Soderling, of course, ranked number 23 in the world, took out Rafael Nadal last week. That will be, of course, tomorrow in the men's final. Patrick LeBron is attempting to negotiate a settlement that will allow him to play in 2009. Burns has an upcoming court hearing on June 15th. Now, in order for him to get the deal to try to play this year, the hearing will have to approve the deal. If that goes through, the commissioner could suspend Burns. So he's going to go through a lot to get back and play in the NFL this season. There are three teams that, if all this goes through, which probably won't, that allegedly have interest in Burns: Tampa Bay, Chicago, and of course the New York Jets. The guy would have to be locked up for the Jets not to have some type of interest. The Jets want everybody. American League scores: the Angels defeat Detroit 2-1. Toronto smacks Kansas City around 9-3. Zach Greinke, Mr. Untouchable, finally gets knocked around as he gives up 7 runs, 5 earned runs, and his ERA goes up to 1.55, which is crazy when you think about it. Texas over Boston 5-1. Ian Kinsler hits his 15th home run of the season. Cleveland sets out Chicago, the White Sox 6-0. Carl Pavano improves to 6-4 on the season. Oakland all over Baltimore 9-1. Matt Holliday homer hits a home run. Minnesota edges out Seattle 2-1 in 10 innings. Ichiro's 27-game hit streak is snapped. On the other side, I will have National League scores as Zambrano gets his 100th win of his career and also homers. So we'll talk about that in the next update. 347-215-6180. We're waiting for Alex Brown. A couple things just to chew on before we get him on the show. In regards to that French Open and with Federer, again, I'll talk about it more later on in the program, but I got, tennis, I want to try to defend him. That some the thing that tennis does sometimes it absolutely to me makes no sense. The Roger Federer semifinal match was not on live in the U.S. a couple of days ago. Federer, of course, it was a great match, by the way. Federer surviving a five-set thriller, surviving a five-set thriller against Juan Martin Del Potro. And the match, again, the match was not on NBC. NBC's coverage of men's semifinals for the French Open go from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And for some reason, Federer's match was scheduled, the French Open scheduled Federer's match to start second. So instead of seeing the number one player, the number two player in the world, instead of seeing a guy who was trying, who was going after history, the biggest, you know, the biggest sport, the biggest star in the sport, instead of seeing him, you saw Robin Fowler and Fernando Gonzalez. And of course, Federer's match, you had to go to the Tennis Channel tape delay, I might add, to watch Federer's match. To me, that makes absolutely no sense. I mean, if you're tennis, you have to just, I don't know. Is it just me? Why would I want to have Roger Federer on Chasing History? Or Roger Federer on This Late Tournament in general? He's the biggest star in your sport. He by far, I mean, they're all great, but this guy, Federer, the guy is going after Pete Sampras's record. On clay, the sport is struggling as it is, and you put Fernando Gonzalez and Robin Soderling, and Soderling's playing well. Don't let me discount Robin Soderling, but Robin Soderling is not Roger Federer as far as star quality. I mean, I wonder what tennis is thinking with this. I wonder what those officials, I mean, whoever makes these decisions are thinking. I mean, it's very similar to the AHL. The ATP and the AHL must be working together. Because they do some of the dumbest things in terms of trying to market a set of the sport that you can possibly do. They can't get out of their own way. I mean, the AHL, and again, we'll talk about this a little later on. The program, the AHL has a game seven, and this series possibly now with the Penguins and Memphis can go game seven. They can have a game seven scheduled for next Friday on a Friday night. Friday night, game seven. Yeah. You know, coming off a sport where, you know, you had a lockout season in 2004-2005. Again, I don't know what to tell you. I just can't defend this. I mean, to not have that. I mean, how many times have you been a tennis fan? How many times have we seen Wimbledon show Pete Sampras when Sampras was great, when he was winning all the championships, find a way, I don't care what match it was, I don't care what time it was, show Pete Sampras on, show a Pete Sampras match late in the tournament. Now, here's the thing, you know, NBC only has a small window to show a semifinal match, just like Wimbledon with the French Open. Same with Wimbledon. Wimbledon, you're not going to see both men's semifinal matches on that Friday. They'll show one match in its entirety, and they'll show part of another match, the end of the previous match. But they're going to show, the smart thing about Wimbledon, they're going to show you the primary match. So if you had an Andre Agassi playing or Pete Sampras playing, you're going to see them play. If you had a Boris Becker playing back in the day, you would see that guy play. But with this situation, I just don't understand what the thought process was for not showing Roger Federer. Again, considering the circumstances, for not showing Roger Federer, even if he wasn't chasing the record, it's still Roger Federer. You're always struggling for an audience as it is now with tennis, with no Americans being, you know, relevant right now. But, you know, that's what tennis does, and that's one of the reasons why their sport is basically I mean, Federer are great, but you know, the sport is not relevant. I mean, it's not a factor right now. It really is not, unless you're an absolute diehard fan like myself who watches the Grand Slams. Tennis is not a big deal in this country. Three four seven 215-6180 is your card number. Of course, you have the Belmont Stakes today, the last leg of the Triple Crown, the last leg of the Racing Triple Crown, and you know, again, it's been a interesting season to say the least out of Triple Crown. And you know, the one thing about this race coming up, I wonder who's going to be that surprise horse that either wins the race or really pushes Mind That Bird. Because Mind That Bird, again, is a clear-cut favorite, despite some of the things I mentioned about possible endurance issues and possible, you know, I wonder endurance issues and just with that. It's still Mind That. I mean, you're a bet, man. You still would bet Mind That Bird. Like, you wouldn't make a lot of money unless you had a lot of money to spend. But Mind That Bird is, with Rachel Alexander out of the way, Mind That Bird is a clear-cut favorite. Calvin Burrell has been the man with the golden touch by both Triple Crown winners in this season, during this Triple Crown season. So you have to like that aspect of it, you have the best jockey right now. So, but again, there's always a horse that comes out that, you know, surprises and runs much better than anybody anticipated. You wonder who's going to be that horse besides like a travel man or besides a Dunkirk. You know, would it be one of the Zito horses, Mind His Escape or Brave Victory, who are both, Mind His Escape and Brave Victory are both 15-1 in terms of their odds. So that would be interesting to see as you watch this race. Again, one thing you want to pay attention to when you're watching this race is not how a horse starts, but how, you know, that last quarter mile, because I'm telling you, that last quarter mile is going to separate the half, it's going to separate the half from the half knots. That last furlong, that last stretch, you know, you're going to see some horses start to fall back, and you're going to see the best conditioned horses, you know, you're going to see the best conditioned horses come out. Now, this is not a race to me of speed. This is not a speed race. I feel like this race to me is built more on a horse's endurance and again a jockey's ability to best pace their horse and not just burn out a lot of energy coming out of the start. That's a challenge now if you're Calvin Burrell, if you're some of these other jockeys on these horses, is to make sure your horse has enough energy to finish this race. A mile and a half is a long way to run a horse around a racetrack. It has a long way. And again, the Belmont has broken down many of horses that looked like they were going to win that particular race. But have just fallen back because of that last furlong. So that'd be definitely interesting to watch during the course of this particular race. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number right now. We'll keep you updated on that Kucinova-Safina match right now. Kucinova is leading up a set and up 3-2 in the second set. It looks like Kucinova is headed towards her second Grand Slam win of her career. And it looks like Danira Safina will be again a Grand Slam, will again come up short in a Grand Slam final. Safina, of course, is ranked number one in the world. Ranked number one in the world. How she's number one in the world with no Grand Slams under her belt is beyond me, but that's the system that is women's tennis, that is tennis in general. The women's rankings, you know, I didn't think about it until she was eliminated, but the women's rankings make no sense as well. You have Venus Williams came into this tournament seeded number three. Venus Williams has never had great success at this tournament. Never. I mean, she's never had, this is not, Clay is not a surface. She's She had some moments on clay and passed it in other tournaments, but never, she's never been a threat to win this tournament. It's never been a real major threat to win this tournament at all. So how, you know, how she was seeded number three was just absolutely, a mystery to me. I don't understand it. I don't understand it whatsoever. But they found a way. I mean, somehow she was seeded number three. But with Safina, again, and Venus Williams, excuse me, Serena Williams come out before the tournament. I have a couple of things I have to say about her. Come out before the tournament and say that she's a real number one. And, I don't know if I can debate that based on the fact that, you have a number one that hasn't won a tournament, hasn't won a Grand Slam tournament. I mean, I've never heard of. That is absolutely unheard of in tennis. To have somebody right number one that hasn't won a tournament. When you have other Grand Slam winners, you know, around the top five who have won Grand Slam tournaments. But right now she's down. She's down, of course, a set and a game right now as Kucinova tries to win her second Grand Slam of her career. As far as Serena goes, you know, and I love Serena. I think Serena, again, she's going to go down as one of the all-time greats, and she's still, to me, the best player in women's tennis. I mean, there's no question. There's just no debate about it. There's no doubt about that. But when she loses a match, can somebody win a match? I mean, is it always about what she doesn't do compared to what that other person did? I mean, she goes out there and loses a Kucinova. Fine. I mean, she makes it to the quarterfinals. No big deal. I mean, she had won the previous two Grand Slams. See, I'm not gonna get on her about not winning the French Open. French Open is a very tough tournament to win. A tough tournament to win, but every time Serena loses, it's always about it's always about that other person. It's always about what she did compared to what that other person did. She never loses. She never gets beat. You know, the other person never wins. It's just her losing. I mean, can she lose with some? Can she lose with some class for once? This is every loss. The only time she shows class when she loses is when she loses to her sister. That's it. That's the only time she shows some any type of class. Is when she loses to Venus. Anybody else is, well, I lost. She didn't win, I lost. And it looks like sour grapes. Again, I'm not knocking her for losing the match. I mean, she lost to she lost to a top 10 player, lost to a very good clay court player late in the French Open. That happens to some of the best players in the world. You know, it's not a big deal to lose in the quarterfinals or semifinals of a tournament against a top 10 player, especially when you've been dominating the last two Grand Slams. At least give the other girl some credit. I mean, Kucinova had to do something right. I mean, she had to. I'm sure she had some winners that she hit. I'm sure she served pretty well. She had to do something. Well, even if you were off your game, she took advantage of it. How many times has Venus Williams beaten somebody when she hasn't played her best tennis? Now, give Kucinova some credit. 347-215-6180. On the other side, at the break, we're going to talk some NBA Finals here at the Orlando Magic try to rebound from just an embarrassing showing in game one. They'll try to rebound and even up the series. We'll talk about that. Also, Roger Federer's attempt on history. Talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. French Open Women's Final is complete. So Svetlana Kuznetsova wins straight set 6-4, 6-2. She claims her first French Open title. The Dallas defeated her first Grand Slam winner. This is Kuznetsova's second Grand Slam. She won the course of 2004. She, of course, won the 2004 U.S. Open again. So Svetlana Kuznetsova, number 7 in the world, defeats the nearest Safina 6-4, 6-2 in the Women's French Open Final. Of course, tomorrow, Roger Federer will try to add to his legendary status as he tries to complete a career Grand Slam with his first ever French Open. He'll be taking on Robin Soderling, number 23 in the world. Federer will also be attempting to tie Pete Sampras' record of 14 career majors in tomorrow's men's French Open final. Plexico Burns is attempting to negotiate a settlement that will allow him to play in 2009. And joining us right now, Alex Brown, who joins us right now to talk about today's Belmont. Alex, are you there?
I'm here, Cyril. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm here and looking forward to hopefully another great horse race for the Triple Crown.
Before we begin with today's race, I talked about it a little bit in my opening. I can't believe that Rachel Alexander is not running this race. To me, I'm disappointed personally that she chose not to run her in this race, coming off everything that it would have set up with Find That Bird. Talk about that.
Sure. I mean, this was a very tough decision to make, I think, for everybody involved with Rachel Alexandra. She proved, I think, in the Preakness that she is the horse that a lot of people thought she was. She was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the troubled trip that Mind That Bird had in the Preakness, and perhaps he could have beaten her with a better trip. Well, her trip was also quite difficult, winning the race right from the front and going wide. So, I mean, she ran a terrific race, and I think certainly for horse racing and for fans, it would have been fantastic to see both these horses come back in the Belmont, and we would have had a lot more buzz for the race and a lot more speculation on really who was the better horse. But, you know, the owner made a decision which I think is probably the correct decision in the long run for the filly. Just not the right decision for horse racing in general. And that was to not run her back in the Belmont and to sort of save her, you know, give her two or three more weeks between races, and she'll probably come back towards the end of June, I think, against fillies. So I think it's definitely a tough decision for horse racing fans. But for the long run career of the filly, Rachel Alexander, probably the right decision.
I understand that, you know, the horse's well-being comes first in terms of, you know, physically. But what baffles me is why do these trainers and owners put more stock in these races, like say the Fairground Oaks, than say the Belmont? I mean, that was a race that she ran, you know, a few months back. Why not? That's the part that I don't understand. I understand what you just said, but that part I don't understand why the Triple Crown races are not, in terms of when it comes to Triple Crown season, are not at a premium as far as being important when it comes to, you know, money.
I mean, think in Rachel Alexandra's case, she actually changed ownership after she won the Kentucky Oaks. So the original owners had no intention of running her in the Triple Crown races at all. And then when she was bought by Jess Jackson and transferred to actually my boss, Steve Asmussen, then the decision was to run her in the Preakness after she dominated the Oaks so impressively. Clearly, having done that in the Preakness, it would have been nice to see her come back in the Belmont. But I think they felt that she'd proven, you know, who she is. She couldn't win the Triple Crown because she didn't run in the Derby, and they'll just save her now for a few races down the road. But I agree with you, and for any fan, this is disappointing. I mean, there's no doubt. If we had Rachel Alexandra and Mind That Bird coming back in the Belmont today, it would have been a fantastic hit for horse racing in general. We'd have got a lot more exposure, and I'm all about the sort of exposure to the industry because,
oh, absolutely,
you know, I want people to enjoy our sport, right? And
it's a great sport.
It's a great sport, and over recent years, it gets more and more marginalized for one reason or another, and this would have been a huge shot in the arm for us. So I'm disappointed. I can only tell you the rationale behind these reasons, but I don't necessarily have to be excited for the decisions that were made. But certainly it was the best decision for the horse herself. The irony is I think she probably could have won today. She probably would have run a terrific race. It would have just probably knocked her out pretty good for subsequent races down the road.
All right, I'll break this race down today. You have only 10 horses in this race, and only Mind That Bird and Flying Private have ran, have made all the Triple Crown runs. Talk about the field. I know a lot of people are like Charitable Man, Challenge Man, Mind That Bird. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think if you look at the race and just strictly on past performances, Mind That Bird is now proven he is the quality horse in this race. Other horses
Absolutely. Really
got to step up if they're going to try to be considered sort of a 3-year-old of the year or whatever. Mind That Bird earned that right by winning the Kentucky Derby and finishing a close second in the Preakness. The thing that is going to be really tough for him today, though, is the point that I think you're probably alluding to. He's coming back. This will be his third race in 5 weeks. He, Flying Private, and oddly that other horse of Lucas's, because he broke his maiden on Derby Day, those three horses will be making their third start in 5 weeks. And that's just really quite difficult to be fresh and to be ready. And he's facing horses that are clearly their training schedules and their racing schedules are designed for them to peak today. So they'll be fresher horses and they'll be really ready to challenge. And two horses that I think are particularly interesting is the one horse that you mentioned, Charitable Man. He obviously showed he was a very nice 2-year-old, lightly raced but very nice. He won the Peter Pan. He's basically Belmont's his home track. He's won there. Kieran McLaughlin seems very confident, and Kieran McLaughlin's a terrific horse trainer. So Charitable Man really will present a very tough challenge for Mind That Bird. And then looking at the horses that are coming out of the Kentucky Derby that skip the Preakness and therefore have 5 weeks to prepare for the Belmont, probably the quality horse of that group is Dunkirk, who has run some impressive races, although he is very lightly raced, which makes you wonder if he's not a little bit fragile. But Dunkirk, Todd Pletcher's horse, will also be quite heavily bet, I believe. I mean, they're my three picks, right? Mind That Bird over Charitable Man over Dunkirk. But I think I'm just kind of hoping that's the result. I'm a little worried that this is a tough campaign for the small horse, and that may be his undoing if he gets beat today. I don't think he'll get beat by a better horse. I think if he does get beat, it's just, you know, the campaign that he's had versus Charitable Man and Dunkirk. And, you know, there are a couple of other horses that you might sort of consider, but those would be my three for sure.
You got me thinking about that from an endurance standpoint. Which is tougher to overcome for a horse? The to mind that load that we run in third, you know, it's third straight to come race. Is it time to overcome that or a horse that hasn't run enough? Which one, you know, which one kind of...
I mean, it's a delicate balance because you look at Don Kirk's past performances. He's a very lightly raced horse. And one can argue that that doesn't give him the seasoning that he needs to be ready for the rigors of Triple Crown races. But you look at, you know, some other recent Triple Crown type horses that have done well, they've been quite lightly raced. So there are definitely arguments either side. But what you have to figure is, you know, when a horse races, it basically will take 3 days off after the race, and then it's going to be 4 or 5 days of training before they start to come around and feel, you know, ready and fit and whatever. And then you kind of want to work them to see exactly where you're at a couple of days later. And just because, you know, these races come quick back to back, it really limits the opportunities that the trainers have to work with the horses to get them to peak on race day and mind that bird. And, you know, on top of that, they've got to kind of ship around to different racetracks and so forth too. And it just makes it more difficult. Whereas if you've got Dunkirk, you ran in the Derby, you didn't run particularly well for sure, but you have some time to regroup, maybe a week or two to see where you're at. Then you have 3 weeks to really focus on the horse to get him ready for today's race. So there's a lot of luxury having a 5 week break versus a 3 week break off of a race where you only had a 2 week break beforehand. So I would say either way is kind of difficult, but you know, we're horsemen, we've got great excuses for anything that doesn't happen the way we want it to happen.
So, you know, given what you just said, does Charitable Man have a physical advantage over any horse in this race, considering the fact that they didn't run either the Derby or the Preakness?
Right. I mean, I think, like, in terms of the seasoning aspect, you could argue that Charitable Man's quite lightly raced. But I don't think the seasoning is as big an issue in the 10-horse Belmont field as it is in the 20-horse Kentucky Derby field. That, you know, it's the Kentucky Derby where seasoning is really important because you're going to face a lot of things for the first time in that race. When you talk about a 10-horse field and it's a mile and a half, which everybody's facing for the first time, but it also means the pace is going to be a bit slower up front. It's not as critical to get brakes sharply out of the gate to get position. Certainly a little bit of lack of seasoning for Charitable Man won't hurt him at all today. And being the fresher horse, you know, he won the Peter Pan, which is traditionally a Belmont prep for those not hammering away at the Triple Crown. It's a perfect, the race sets up perfectly for him. If he's good enough, he has all the advantages, I think. Whereas, you know, I do believe Mind That Bird is good enough, but he's faced with a number of disadvantages, whether it's, you know, Belmont for the first time, the third race in 5 weeks, the shipping around, and so on and so forth. I hope that Mind That Bird can overcome some of those issues, and clearly that's who I'm rooting for. But I do think, you know, Charitable Man has some advantages, home court, fresh, and clearly he's a quality horse, just like Mind That Bird.
You know, considering that this is the longest track, this is the longest of the three races, mile and a half, what are the speed horses at a disadvantage? I would think that you would have to kind of pace your horse a little bit more in this race than the other two based on, you know, again, based on the mile and a half track. Talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, the pace is going to be quite important. You would think that a horse that likes to come from behind and come from a long way behind, like Mind That Bird, will be an advantage in a longer race like the Belmont, where the race sets up, you would think, more so for a deep closer. The reality is horses that sit relatively close to the pace and grind it out seem to do better in this race. So it'll be interesting to see how the tactics play out, but surely they're not going to change their tactics on Mind That Bird, since you know, the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness tactics have moved this horse up phenomenally. So he'll be coming from behind. The question is, will he have a strong enough pace to be running at, and will the front runners be backing up, or will they still be galloping and running on at the end? Less traffic trouble, because it is a bigger racetrack, so that shouldn't be a big concern for Calvin Burrell. But it'll be interesting. I think it's going to be a very interesting horse race. It just doesn't have quite the kick it would have if we were also talking about Rachel Alexandra, which would have made it that much more intriguing for sure.
Now, Calvin Burrell, you know, has done a lot of talking this week, to say the least.
Yeah.
You know, you know this better than just about better than anybody. Is he starting to like annoy some of the horse racing people with all the talking, similar to like, I'm not going to compare it. I compare it a little bit to Rick Dutton. I think Rick Dutton last year was just so over the top. It was, you know, ridiculous. I'm not going to say it was as bad, but people are starting. I've heard that comparison a little bit. Is it more like, are people starting to get annoyed, or is it just like, hey, he is a great jockey. He does have probably the best horse. Something like that.
I mean, Calvin Burrell is definitely different. I mean, this is a guy he's won two Kentucky Derbies now. He won the Preakness, obviously, on Rachel Alexandra. So clearly he's at the top of our sport. And as you said, he's been talking up this horse. He can't get beat, yada, yada, yada. You'd think he's a little bit arrogant with those kind of remarks. But he's also a guy that gets up first thing in the morning. He'll muck stalls, he gallops horses as well as working horses. He's a hard-working dude, and, you know, people like that. So I don't really have much to say about Mr. Dottrow, but, I mean, Calvin Burrell, good guy. You know, I think I wouldn't ever be as confident as he seems to be and verbalize that, because I think that sometimes that comes back and bites you. But I quite like to have a jockey on my horse's back that is as confident as Calvin. And clearly, you know, he knows the horse, or at least he knows what the horse is capable of. So I'd be quite happy that he's confident, but it's probably a little bit over the top. But he's such a good guy. He's a hard-working dude. You know, fair play to him. Let's hope he's correct.
Why have these California horses struggled so much in the Triple Crown season this year?
Yeah, it just seems it's not their year this year. I don't think there's any particular reason. Some would argue, you know, that it's all synthetic track racing over there, and that changes the dimensions a little bit for them. But, you know, I think if their horses are good enough, they would have come over and be able to compete. I mean, Pioneer of the Nile ran a decent race in the Derby. He just got beat by a freakish performance. So it's not like they've not shown up at all. But, you know, they're just probably not a good crop from California in total this year. But that doesn't mean to say that next year you're going to not see some real good horse come out of there. I mean, they have great horsemen in California. And, you know, their racing program is still pretty strong, although it has suffered, I think, much like everything else in California. But, you know, they are liable to have good horses year in, year out. So if they're not doing well this year, it's more of an anomaly versus a trend, I think.
One last one, and I'll let you go. You've seen both races. You watched a million races.
Yeah.
Based on what you've seen in the two, you know, the Derby and the Preakness, you know, I was more impressed. I was just as impressed with mine that Bird finishing second as I was Richard Alexander winning that race, winning the Preakness. Yeah. I thought it legitimized mine that Bird being a very good horse. Which one is better? I mean, it was a question that I hoped that was going to be answered today. Can you say one is clearly better than the other? I mean, to me, I'd have to go back and forth. What is your thoughts on that?
So just repeat that last bit one more time.
I say it would. I think it would go back. It would. You know, it seems to be debatable on which one is better.
Right.
Between,
okay.
Alexander and Mind That Bird. What is your thoughts? I don't know. What is your thoughts on that? On which horse is the better horse? We're hoping that question will get answered today.
Mind That Bird versus Rachel Alexandra.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, obviously, we were hoping today would have answered any questions. I mean, I'm a fan of both horses, right? So I can be biased arguing either case. I think Mind That Bird did something in the Kentucky Derby that was absolutely freakish. I mean, the way he ran that last 3/8 of a mile and won by 7 lengths was extraordinary. The day before, Rachel Alexandra did something extraordinary herself. And in fact, when I came on your program for the first time, we talked about Rachel Alexandra's freakish win in the Oaks. So they both did extraordinary things that weekend. I think in the Preakness, you can argue that both horses ran terrific races. Mind That Bird had traffic trouble, had all sorts of things going against him, yet looked like he was closing in on Rachel Alexandra right at the end. So lots of people argue that with a little bit longer, he could have won, yada, yada, yada. Better trip, he could have won, yada, yada, yada. The other side to that is Rachel Alexandra had to take the lead, not an easy task, was carried wide around the first turn and so forth, and with a better trip, she could have won perhaps a little bit more comfortably. And maybe if Mind That Bird had got a bit closer to her, she might have had a bit more left in the engine. We just don't know these answers. So it would have been terrific to have the Belmont illustrate or test each camp's arguments, as it were. But I think both horses have proven that they are the real deal. A lot of naysayers after the Derby saying that Mind That Bird's, you know, was a one trick pony and he'll never reproduce that. He reproduced it in the Preakness, absolutely no doubt about it. Nobody questions the quality of this horse at this point. And I'm glad for that. If nothing else, nobody can ever discount the performance of Mind That Bird's Derby win now. I mean, it was terrific, and he proved in the Preakness that he is a real good racehorse.
So when and where do you think we'll see these two horses race against each other again? If we'll see it all.
Yeah, I mean, we could. I imagine Rachel Alexandra will run against the fillies, certainly in her next start. But it's possible that there could be a matchup in the Travis Stakes, in Saratoga, or, you know, even in the Breeders' Cup, you just never know. They might compete in the Classic together. There's also another filly and on the West Coast, an older mare called Zenyatta, who's 10-for-10 and undefeated, and lots of people are trying to sort of, well, they're speculating whether we'll see a matchup between Zenyatta and Rachel Alexandra. Basically, horse racing has three stars at this point. Mind That Bird, who we'll see today, Rachel Alexandra, who hopefully we'll see again soon, and Zenyatta, an older mare who's never been beaten. And, you know, if racing is fortunate, we'll see these horses compete against each other at some point, or at least two of them compete, and we'll people will come out and watch that. It'll be a terrific spectacle.
Well, Alex, again, it's been great as always. Thanks for coming on. I'll be looking forward to this race, despite no Rachel Alexandra, and seeing how that bird can, you know, finish, can get two out of three of these races. And we'll talk to you down the road, certainly. Hopefully they face off in the Breeders' Cup. That would be great.
Yeah. If any of these guys compete against each other, have me back on the show. That would be terrific.
Oh, absolutely. Alex, thanks for coming on. Enjoy the race.
Will do. Take care. Good luck.
All right.
Cheers.
That, of course, is Alex Brown, who writes a blog for The Rail and for the New York Times. Knows just about as much about horse races as a man could know. I mean, he gave you everything you wanted to know there on why Rachel Alexandra didn't race and the ins and outs of that. So I've been looking forward to the race. Even though I'm disappointed that Rachel Alexandra is not in the race, I'm very interested to watch Mind That Bird and see, just to see if the fatigue will be a factor come today at the Belmont. still to come. NBA Finals. Can Orlando tie the series? We'll look at that, and we'll look at that. And Roger Federer attempts to make history. That's coming up, and much, much more still to come on the Saturday morning wake up call. Your host, Real Quick, taking you to the bottom half, taking you down to 11:30 hour. We have a lot of time and a lot of things to talk about after this update. So Zoraida Kuzminova has won her second major. She defeats Safina in straight sets 6-4, 6-2. She denies Safina her first major title. Kuzminova, who has won the U.S. Open in 2004, gets her second Grand Slam of her career in the men's and women's French Open final. Of course, tomorrow you'll have Roger Federer gunning for history as he will take on Robin Soderling in the men's French Open final. Stanley Cup action tonight. Game five between Detroit and Pittsburgh in Detroit. Pittsburgh, of course, has won the last two games. Pavel Datsyuk, the MVP candidate for the Red Wings, will play game five. Datsyuk has been out this entire series with a foot injury. National League scores. Chicago edges out Cincinnati 2-1. Carlos Zambrano gets career win number 100. He also homered in the game. The Mets over Washington 3-1 in 10 innings. Francisco Rodriguez gets his 15th save of the season. San Francisco defeats Florida 2-1. Zito gets the win and goes 2-6 on the season. Milwaukee shuts out Atlanta 4-0. Yovani Gallardo pitched very well this season, is now 6-2. Houston all over Pittsburgh 9-1. 9-1 has not been a good week. It's not been a good week to say the least. If you're a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. Arizona shuts out in San Diego 8-0. The Dodgers trip up the Phillies 4-3. Staff Philadelphia is 7-game winning streak. Jonathan Boxton improves to 6-0 on the season. Philadelphia is 20-7 on the road. That is amazing. There's some tremendous record. Too bad they play in a bandbox or a ballpark that clearly is hurting that pitcher staff. 347-215-6180. We're going to shift gears now to the NBA Finals. Of course, game one, the Lakers just had their win with the Orlando Magic. After a relatively competitive quarter and a half, Kobe Bryant took over the game in that second quarter, and particularly in that third quarter, the Lakers, you know, ran over Orlando 100-75. And listen, I'm not, you know, I think the Lakers are going to win the series. I think that, you know, I think they're the better team. I think Orlando just, when you play the Lakers, the most important part of beating the Lakers, the most important aspect is defense. You have to be a great, the reason why Orlando can't win the series, well, I don't think they're going to win the series, I shouldn't say can't, but the reason why they're going to have a tough time in the series is they can't guard the Lakers. They can't. I mean, they can't guard them. These are the teams that have success against the Lakers. Those are the teams that match up and can guard the Lakers, like Boston last year. You look at Houston. Even injured, Houston is a great defensive team. That's one of the reasons why the Lakers beat Denver. You have to be able to, you know, if you're not, to me, I don't know how you beat the Lakers if you're not a great defensive team. Because they're going to score. I mean, they're going to put points on the board. There's too many weapons going playing from inside out. And unlike Cleveland, and unlike even Boston, Orlando has not seen a team in this year's playoffs with the kind of front court people that the Lakers pose. I mean, you're talking about, you know, three guys and Odom, Bynum, and Gasol that can, on a good night, can get you 20 points. Even Bynum. Bynum played well, I thought, against Howard, despite getting the foul trouble. Gasol is a major matchup problem for Rashawn Lewis, and that is a matchup that Orlando, to have any chance of winning the series, has to dominate. They have to win. Rashawn Lewis has outplayed Paul Gasol by a lot in order for Orlando to win this series. Again, I was surprised at the effort Orlando gave. That probably would be the most, you know, disappointing thing for Orlando Magic fan, the effort. I mean, to get beat by 25 points in game one, and then after the game you're talking about, you know, they played harder. That's not what you want to hear. You know, this is the NBA Finals. We played harder. They played harder, excuse me. Should never come out of the losing team's mouth. I mean, maybe in a regular season, maybe an early round playoff game, but not the NBA Finals. But again, it's one game. I don't think that game will tell the story of the series, despite the fact that the odds are now against Orlando, considering Phil Jackson's record you know, 43-0 when he's won game one of a playoff series that he's coached. Lakers have never lost a playoff series under Phil Jackson when they've won the game one of any playoff series. So Orlando definitely has it against them. Two things Orlando has to do to get back to, you know, to have any chance of winning the series. Number one, they have to win game two, obviously. You cannot go down 2-0 and expect, there's no way to beat the Lakers three straight times in Orlando. It's not going to happen. I mean, the home team has only happened twice in the history of the NBA Finals that the home team has won all three games. Miami did it on 6, and Detroit did it against the Lakers in 2004. And, I mean, the Lakers are just too good of a road team for that to happen. Well, two things have to happen. Number one, you got to make Kobe Bryant. You have to make Kobe Bryant either a scorer or a facilitator. He can't be, but he can't have a game where he gets 40 points and 8 assists. If he gets 40 points and 2 assists, or 40 points and no assists, fine. You make him take 35, 36 shots. You make him a value shooter. Oh, that's okay. You can't let him be. You can't let him be. You can't let him be both. He can't be facilitator and scorer. He can't. You know, one thing, if he gets 22 points, 11 assists, that's not good from the standpoint that you better make him a scorer than a facilitator. But he can't. There's no way that Orlando can win this series if he's both. You look at his stats. So he has 40 points and 8 assists. He could have. You know, he was missing. You know, they made his life, their defense on him was just terrible from the standpoint of their pick and roll defense. I mean, he had any shot he wanted to have. I mean, he could have 50 in that game easily. Easily could have 50 points. It's a lot of, he missed a lot of easy shots that he normally makes. And number two, I was talking to my cousin about this, I don't think Jermaine Nelson should play. I think that you're bringing a guy back, point guard, that hasn't played since February. Okay, you're messing up your rotation. Rayford Austin, your team was in a great rhythm coming into these finals with the rotation, with the way they were playing. And, you know, don't tell me that throwing Jameer Nelson into the mix does not disrupt that. It does. I mean, Stan Van Gundy wants to sit up there and say, well, you know, his presence didn't cause Rayford Austin to miss open shots. Well, I beg to differ. You know, Rayford Austin had been playing 30, 35 minutes without Nelson being in the lineup. Now he's going to be playing probably 20 to 25 minutes. That's a big difference, especially at this point of the year. Forget about Anthony Johnson. I mean, his minutes going down is not a factor. But I just think you just disrupt the chemistry. I mean, you got to let a guy work your way into, you know, game shape and work himself into a season in the NBA Finals. I mean, look at Andrew Bynum. Andrew Bynum got injured back in late January. Bynum is just about getting himself back to where he was before the injury. He's not even there yet. But think about how many games he's played. He played the last 6 or 7 of the regular season and played over now 20 playoff games. I mean, bringing this guy back, I don't know if there's any pressure from the guy, pressure from owner Smith and or from the ownership to bring him back. But I would not play him. If I'm just standing there ready, I don't play him. I mean, I would have to be in some desperate straits. I would have to be down 2-0. It would have to be desperation time for me to play him. And even then. So I was definitely surprised. I was definitely surprised to see him play, in his NBA Finals. I know he had great success against the Lakers over the course of the regular season, you know, lit him up about 27 a game. But again, this is the NBA Finals. But again, I don't think Orlando is out of this series. They've bounced back from a lot more than a 25-point loss. It's a team that's bounced back from numerous buzzer beaters and what have you, losing home court. You still have a game. You still have an opportunity to steal home court from the Lakers. But again, Sunday is an absolute must win for Orlando. Must win. And there's no juice in this series if Orlando doesn't win game two. If the Lakers win game two, it's just a matter of if. It's a matter of when, not if they will win a championship. But you get the sense that, you know, Kobe Bryant's not going to be denied. And he really, you know, he's been very short with the media. He's been, you know, the intensity, I've never seen him, and I've been watching Kobe Bryant play like a lot of, you know, people basketball fans since high school. I've never seen him this focused and this intent on winning a championship. It's just, you know, his will, he's going to will the Lakers to a championship, it seems like. And I picked it at 7. I don't like re-digging on predictions I made. If I, you have me right now, I probably would lead to a 6, but I still say the Lakers in 7 games. But I didn't see anything that would lead me to believe that Orlando's going to win this series, that Orlando's going to win this series coming out of game 1. So you will get game 2 tomorrow night, early start, 8 o'clock on a Sunday, which is certainly good. Certainly good for those who are going to work and kids going to school to follow on Monday. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Wake Up Call. We'll discuss Federer, who will try to attempt to make history tomorrow. In the French Open final, his legacy, what's on the line. We'll talk about that, and also Stanley Cup has a lot of interest in it. Detroit Pistons square off tonight for game 5. We'll talk about that and some baseball. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 347-215-6180 is your call number, 347-215-6180. Svetlana Kuznetsova is your women's French Open champion. Kuznetsova defeats Danila Safina 6-2, 6-4, 6-2. She was her second grand slam of her first French Open. Of course, tomorrow you have the men's French Open title championship between Roger Federer and Robin Soderling. Federer is attempting to tie Keith Simpson's record of 14 career majors. He also is attempting to become just the sixth man to ever win a career grand slam. The last to do so was Andre Agassi, ironically, at the French Open 10 years ago. Pascal Burns is attempting to negotiate a settlement that will allow him to play in 2009. Burns has a June 15th hearing coming up in a Manhattan court. Even if the deal goes through with Burns, the court will still have to approve the deal at the hearing. And even if that goes through, the commissioner will still have to avoid suspending Burns for him to play this year. Mostly, more likely, looking unlikely. Some of the teams that seem to be interested in Burns are Tampa Bay, Chicago, and of course the New York Jets. American League scores: LA, the Angels over Detroit 2-1. Toronto smacks Kansas City 9-3. Texas gets by Boston 5-1. Kinsler hits his 15th home run of the season. Cleveland shuts out Chicago 6-0. Oakland all over Baltimore 9-1. Minnesota edges Seattle 2-1. Israel has his 27 game hit streak snapped. On the other side, I will have National League scores. Of course, tomorrow you will see a possible historic moment in tennis history as Roger Federer, the great Roger Federer, attempts to win career Grand Slam number 14. Of course, things have been making his way throughout this tournament. It started last Sunday when Rafael Nadal was taken down by Robin Soderling, the guy who Federer will be playing tomorrow. In tomorrow's final, Soderling, and these are the type of guys that give Nadal trouble. Soderling just knocks a tall off the ball. I mean, it seems like these power guys like Soderling or even Andy Murray give Nadal trouble. Soderling clearly outplayed Nadal in that match, and we'll be trying to put on hold Roger Federer's attempt at history. Listen, this is the biggest match of Roger Federer's career. By far. I mean, it's not even close to me. He has a chance to do something to me that would cement him being the greatest tennis player of all time. If he wins tomorrow, he'll have a career grand slam, go top three sandwich with 14 career grand slams in all. He would have, to me, redeemed himself from losing to Nadal in the Australian and Wimbledon. And I don't want to hear it. If he goes out there and wins tomorrow and does it makes history. I don't want to hear anybody talk about, well, he didn't beat Federer. He didn't beat Nadal to do so. I don't care. You know who Andre Agassi beat 10 years ago to win his career grand slam in the French Open? Guess who? Yeah, you probably wouldn't know this unless you're a diehard fan. Andre Medvedev. And last time I checked, Andre Medvedev was not in anybody's tennis hall of fame. It doesn't matter who you beat to get the accomplishment. The main thing is the accomplishment. And again, it's only 5 men right now have won career grand slams. It is almost an impossible feat. Some of the greatest tennis players that walked the face of the face of this earth, particular male, haven't won career grand slams. I mean, Yvonne Lendl, John McEnroe, Bjorn Borg, just to name a few. Even the great Pete Sampras never won a French Open. So it is probably one of the rarest feats in all of tennis, one of the toughest feats in all of sports, to be honest with you. And Federer will attempt to do so. Lifetime, he is 9-0 against Soderling. Listen, Soderling has all kinds of talent. Soderling is a guy who, if he stays fit, if he stays focused, is going to win some Grand Slams down the road. Or soon, or very soon. Sorry, he's only 24 years old. And again, I watched the Nadal match, and that was not a fluke. He clearly outplayed Nadal. The guy has all kinds of ability. But tomorrow, I feel that the stage will be just too big. I cannot see Roger Federer losing this match. I can't see it. He's too close. You know, again, Soderling is his first Grand Slam final. He's never been this far in a Grand Slam tournament. He's only won three titles in his entire career, all of the indoors, by the way. So it's right there for Roger Federer. He will not have a better. This is now better for Federer as far as winning a career Grand Slam. He will not have a better opportunity to win the French Open than the one he has right now. He's only going to get older. Nadal will be back next year. You know Nadal will be focused and ready to come 2010 for the French Open. So I expect Federer to win this match and, again, take his place in history as being the greatest player of all time. I think right now, I have to say Pete Sampras, based on the 14 majors, the 7 Wimbledons, and just how great he was against top-notch competition going in against Andre Agassi all those years. But Federer wins, Federer is better, because Federer has been more dominant than Sampras over the course of his career. You're talking about a guy, who's had periods of his career where he's won 5 straight Wimbledons, and right now, he currently is the 5-time defending U.S. Open champion. I mean, he's had three years where he's won 3 out of 4 Grand Slams in a particular season, in a year, something that Sampras never did. I mean, Federer has just been a more dominant player, and plus, the thing that's going to separate him is the fact that Federer doesn't have a weaker surface. I mean, Sampras clearly was not a great clay court player. I mean, he had one run he made at the French Open where he made it to the semifinals, but that was not his first. That was not his favorite surface. Federer can play on any surface. And to me, the most impressive thing about everything Federer has done in his career is the 20 straight Grand Slam semifinal appearances he's made. The next closest is 10 with Ivan Lendl. To put that in perspective, it's almost hard to put in perspective how hard that is to win 5 matches in every Grand Slam you enter on all these different surfaces. I mean, you see guys finish, go to the quarterfinals of Wimbledon, get knocked out of the first round of U.S. Open, make it to the third round of the French Open, get knocked out of semifinals of Australia. It happens all the time, even by the best. Look at Andy Roddick. Andy Roddick, who had a great French Open, made it to the quarterfinals, and that's as far as he's ever made it. There were years where guys like Boris Becker, Andre Agassi, wouldn't even go to Wimbledon because he thought he didn't have a chance there. Some players, there were a lot of American players who were mid-level club guys like a Brad Gilbert and some of these other guys who wouldn't even go to the French Open because they thought they had no chance to win. So again, Jimmy Federer has a lot on the line. I expect him to certainly rise to the occasion and get that 14th Grand Slam championship. Of course, tonight you will see you have Game 5 of the Stanley Cup. And if Pittsburgh is to win this series, and right now, if you're a Pittsburgh fan, you have to like the position that they're in. You can go back to second period, 2-1 Detroit. Detroit's on a power play, and Jordan Staal scored a shorthanded goal to tie the game, and Pittsburgh after that took total control of the game. And to me, right now, they're in control of the series as they head back to Detroit for a critical Game 5. To me, I think this game decides who wins this series, in my opinion. I cannot see, Pittsburgh wins this series, wins this game. To me, they're going to wrap it up in Detroit. I can't see Pittsburgh. I can see if Pittsburgh loses, I can see them winning at home, tying up at 3, but I can't see Pittsburgh winning at Game 7 in Detroit, especially considering Detroit will have, Detroit's going to have a lot of days off in between games 6 and game 7. And right now, looking at Detroit, Detroit is a tired team right now. They look dead in that second period from an endurance standpoint, from a physical standpoint. They played 5 games now in 8 days. They're the older of the two teams. They've been terrible on the power play. And Pittsburgh, to me, tonight, Pittsburgh has a golden, despite the fact that the game's in Detroit, Pittsburgh has a golden opportunity to go in there and steal that game. Because the way I see it is good. I mean, Pittsburgh has one of the best power plays in hockey. Detroit has been bad at a power play. You know, you commit power, you commit silly penalties when you're tired. Is a more likelihood for you to commit, for a team to commit a lot of penalties. And I can see Detroit, I can see Pittsburgh limiting the power play tonight, in tonight's game. Of course, Detroit will have Pavel Datsyuk back, but right now they definitely need him. Right now Malkin and Crosby both have it going. Malkin, when Malkin has it going, I've said this before, when Malkin is playing well, Pittsburgh is a different team. I understand Crosby's probably their best player, but Malkin, he's the X factor. He is absolutely the X factor on that team. When you have both of those guys playing well, they're almost unbeatable. And now Pittsburgh is starting to get some contributions for their role players. Maxine Talbot's playing well. I told you about the Jordan Staal goal. You have guys like Chris Letang playing well. It's starting to play well. Bill Guerin, Sergei Gonchar. They are getting contributions from everywhere, and that was not the case in the first two games. And I give Pittsburgh a lot of credit. They looked dead in the water after game two, losing 3-1. It could have been like, oh, here we go again. But they get on the board in game three with that win, and then on Thursday night, they just took it to Detroit in that second period. They were able to run away with that game and win 4-2. So interesting game tonight. Critical game 5 in the Stanley Cup. Again, hockey, I mentioned it earlier in the show, can hockey get it right from a scheduling standpoint? Pittsburgh, after this game, both teams are going to have a couple days off. They're going to have 2 days off, and there will be no game Sunday and Monday. They're going to play on Tuesday. If it gets past game 6, there will not be a game. Game 7 won't be till Friday. How can you have a game 7 on a Friday night, the championship of your league on a Friday night? You can't do it. You could have even just had, game 5 tonight, game 6 Monday, and game 7 on Thursday. Make it a gap between game 6 and 7. Why are we making a big gap between games 5 and 6? I don't understand that. There is a gap between games 6 and 7 with Tuesday and Friday, which by the way favors Detroit. That's why it's important for Pittsburgh to get the series over with 6 games, because that physical aspect goes out the window with Detroit having basically 3 days off between game six and the start of game 7. But again, it should be an interesting game coming up tonight. I'm definitely looking forward to it. This is the NHL in the worst way needs I wanted to say they need a game 7, but I'm not sure if it's not the best thing for this series to be over 6, considering that I don't see a lot of people watching this game, game 7 on a Friday night. Other than the diehards of hockey. Still to come on the final segment of the Saturday morning wake up call, 200-300 game winners going in opposite directions. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday. And LeBron goes to the principal's office. We'll talk about that and much, much more on the final segment coming up of the Saturday morning wake up call. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Svetlana Kuznetsova is your French Open women's champion. She defeats Danila Safina 6-4, 6-2. Kuznetsova wins her second major. She won the 2004 U.S. Open. Safina still has never, despite being ranked number one in the world, still has yet to ever win a Grand Slam championship. Game 5 of the Stanley Cup tonight in Detroit as the series is even at 2. Pavel Datsyuk will play for Detroit after missing all the Stanley Cup with a foot injury. Game 5 in Detroit, the series is tied at 2. Pascal Burns is attempting to negotiate a settlement that would allow him to play in 2009. In order for Burns to play, but the settlement not only has to go, the settlement a deal has to be reached, but the hearing, the court has to approve the deal, and also the commissioner has to not suspend Burns for the upcoming 2009 season. Tampa Bay, Chicago, and the New York Jets have our teams of interest in terms of acquiring Burns. American National League scores. Chicago defeats Cincinnati 2-1, calls the number vinyl, gets win number 100. The Mets over Washington 10 days 3-1. San Francisco edges Florida 2-1. Milwaukee shuts out Atlanta 4-0. Houston all over Pittsburgh 9-1. Arizona shuts out San Diego 8-0. And the Dodgers snap Philadelphia 7-game win streak with a 4-3 win. Of course, Randy Johnson reached career win number 300 this week against the Washington Nationals, and the Nationals, who have made a habit of allowing milestones. Of course, you remember Barry Bonds with home run number 756 about 2 years ago. They give him another milestone. Randy Johnson becomes the 24th pitcher ever to win 300 games. Johnson, you know, you can make a case that he's been the best pitcher in baseball over the last 20 years in this generation. I mean, you have guys like Barry, Clemens, Pedro Martinez, Tom Glavin, to say the least, but this guy has been amazing. He's been dominant throughout the course of his career. I mean, he's 45 years old and still pitching pretty relatively well. I know his ERA is high this year at 5.12, but he's still 5-4. And when you break down his career, the amazing thing about his career is he has more wins after the age of 40 than he had when he was in his 20s. He won 64 games while in his 20s, and since he turned 40, he's won 72 games. One of the all-time greats. Johnson's career really didn't start coming about until he was about, he didn't win his first game until he was 25. Until he was 25 years old, didn't have his first great season until he was about, until 1993 when he was 19 and 8 with Seattle. But as he's gotten older, he's gotten better. I mean, there's all this to it. Again, one of the most dominant pitchers in the history of the game. If you're a left-handed batter, he was an absolute nightmare to face. One of the most dominant, one of the most intimidating pitchers that the game has ever seen. And again, you can make a strong case for him being the best pitcher over the last of this generation. He had, I know his postseason record is only 7-9, but remember he had a great postseason in 2001 when, along with Curt Schilling, he led the Arizona Diamondbacks to a World Series championship with an MVP, co-MVP with Schilling in that World Series. As he saves, he saves Game Six. He wins Game Six. Got the save in Game Six, and won Game Seven. He was great during that playoffs. He was great in that series. In that series, when they Arizona upset the then 3-time defending world champion New York Yankees. As far as Tom Glavin goes, and Glavin, who's another 300-game winner, he gets released by Atlanta Braves. Atlanta Braves did about as bad a job as you could do. Glavin is 43 years old. They release him after having him pitch in the minor league. He's pitching against in single A. He throws 11 scoreless innings and believes that he's going to make a start tomorrow. He believes he's going to start his first game of the season tomorrow, coming off an injury. Number one, from a baseball standpoint, it makes perfect sense him getting released. Glavin, again, he's 43 years old. His fastball couldn't crack painted glass at this point in his career. Obviously a Hall of Fame pitcher, along with Randy Johnson, one of the best left-handers of all time, one of the best pitchers of this generation. But Tom Glavin, he's finished as a pitcher. But the Braves should have known this before the season. I mean, they make it, nobody and people around baseball, when the Braves, signed him, knew what the Braves were doing. And you can talk to any major baseball writer and, Sports Illustrated, they were just shaking their heads. Like, why are they even taking a chance on this guy at this stage in his career? So you tease him, you basically tease him, tell him, you know, go out there and have him do all this rehab work. He gets back to where he can physically pitch again. So it was 11 scoreless innings. Then you say, well, we don't think he could have succeeded. I mean, hold on. I mean, what, you know, could it be that you didn't want him to pay him the $1 million bonus that he would have got, roster bonus that he would have got had he been added to your roster? And don't just say it. Don't just sneeze at $1 million and say, well, you know, $1 million is not a big deal. I mean, in this economic times in baseball, $1 million is a very big deal. If you don't have to pay it, you're not going to pay it. Again, I completely blame. Gravity obviously was upset. He was mistreated. He didn't deserve to be treated like that, considering what he's done for that organization. He's been a class act. He's been great for baseball. You know, obviously a Hall of Famer. You know, Shields comes out and apologizes yesterday. You know, a day late, a dollar short, as far as I'm concerned. But they're actually a bad job by the Braves. And everybody knows that they wanted to, that they, you know, it looks bad because now they're bringing up their prospect that they refused to trade, that they refused to trade when they were in the negotiations with San Diego for Jake Peavy is Tommy Harrison. Now they're bringing him up and, he will be certainly pitching. Will be pitching soon for the Braves. So again, I don't understand what, you know, why they were just basically jerking Tom Glavine's chain as far as, you know, as far as having him on a team. He never should have been on a team. They never should have re-signed him in the first place. Never. A couple things. You know, chew on before we head on out. LeBron James, of course, was fined $25,000 by David Stern for skipping out after Game 6. After Game 6, he skipped out on the media post-game interview. And also didn't shake, you know, on Dwight Howard or any other Orlando Magic's hand after the game. I don't think he was fined for that. I just think this was strictly about the media. Skip it out on the media. I think one thing I don't understand about this, and I clearly agree with the fine. You gotta take the good with the bad. You can't, you know, when you were rolling over Atlanta and rolling over Miami, you couldn't wait to get in front of a camera. You know, now you get smacked around by Orlando. Yeah, you wanna, you know, run the duck for cover. He's the face of the league, the face of the fan, first of the Cleveland, the face of the league. You can't do that. So he definitely should have been fined, but he should have been fined right away. I don't understand why David Stern had to go through this, you know, national investigation and had to go, you know, do research. He had to do research. What research? He skipped the media. I don't understand what was the holdup in terms of firing him. First he said he wasn't going to fire him. Then he comes out after basically a public outcry, not so much to fire him, but after LeBron has gotten ripped by media and the public alike, now he comes out and fires him. You know, everybody knows if you don't go to the, if you don't fulfill media requirements during the playoffs, finals, playoffs, whatever, that's an automatic fine when you refuse to talk to the media. It's been that way since, as far as I can remember. But again, LeBron did a bad job with that. You can't listen. You represent the league. You represent your franchise. You as a star player, you're a leader on the team. You had to sit up there and let your teammates hang out the dry, ask some questions about LeBron. Where's LeBron? And you can't skip out. You have to talk to the media, win or lose, win, lose, or draw. And as far as him not shaking Dwight Howard's hand or any Orlando Magic player's hand, you get that. It makes you look like a sore loser, basically, with that. I don't know. I mean, I can see you not shaking anybody else's hand on the team, but, I mean, you did play with last time I checked, you did play with Dwight Howard in the Olympics last year. Maybe they're not as close as we, you know, maybe they're not that close, but still, I think you have to just, you know, swallow your pride, check your ego at the door, and shake the team's hand as they're going out. I remember last year, Kobe Bryant walking off the floor, you know, coming off a 39-point shellacking in Game 6 of Boston, talked in front of the media, you know, talked to Doc Rivers, and went about his business. I'm sure he didn't want to talk to anybody after that particular game, but you do what you gotta do. So I hope you enjoyed this particular program, 90 minutes of the Saturday morning wake up call, one of the great weekends in all the sports. You have Stanley Cup, you have NBA Finals, you have, of course, the Belmont today, you have tennis tomorrow with Roger Federer trying to make history. A lot, just a big sports weekend. Of course, you have baseball all weekend long. So a lot of sports going on, and what a great weekend in all of sports. I will see you next week, regular time, 10:30, on the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Enjoy your week. So long.